This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Upstate Outdoors, the second show of the day, if you go by hours. I tell you what,
it's all good.
I am a very type A person when it comes to scheduling the show.
Like overload, okay?
Yeah, and I mean, I like to have things all planned out, and you know, I was actually talking to Bob McLean about that a while back, and Bob was like, "When I prep for the show, I might only get about 15%." I'm like, Bob, if I put it in a schedule, we covering that sun. I'll cut somebody. Hey, look, man, we got to get on to the next thing. Let's go.
See, Bob is like Springer. Yeah. We're free spirit. We're just roll with it, man.
Well, Bob also gets a lot of calls, and yes, when he talks about something, it expands it out. And that's cool. That works for his show. We tried to do that early on, and it didn't really work for our show.
True.
Not to say we don't like to take callers, but, you know, we get some texts here and there and everything. But, you know, we try to cover a wide variety. But anyway, so when I scheduled Brandon Cobb, he was like, "Yeah, well, you know, whatever works." I thought I had scheduled him for 12:30, but I scheduled him for 1:30, and then I put it in the schedule. So I was all confused.
Okay.
So this hour, we are going to talk with Brandon Cobb about his win at Lake Hartwell. And if I don't know, he might know something about striped bass. I'm sure he's caught a couple.
So I have.
We could recap that, but we'll talk to Brandon Cobb. We're going to have we talk a little turkey. We already we mentioned that during the first hour intro. Got a survey DNR's doing, and there's a lot of that building where they're trying to get some public input, and I really think a lot of it is kind of creeping towards supporting changing the season dates. We'll also talk about that white turkey, and the end of the show we'll have the calendar of events. Which you've got that survey there. Was that printed out for the calendar of events?
No, that was part of the show.
You're just printing that out.
Yeah, right.
And then we'll have our parting shot about a lady up in Canada who faced off with a cougar, the feline variety, to protect her son. So pretty cool there.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
Scary crazy.
And but right now... I got the eye roll.
We own it today, cuz. Oh, my gosh. Live radio is just too cool.
2 weeks on the road.
Two weeks on the road.
We're a little rusty.
It's too cool. All right, folks. For those of y'all that's been able to thump a thunder chicken, you know, in between lightning, 40-mile-an-hour winds, and God only knows what Mother Nature else is going to throw at
us. Thump or get thumped.
Yeah, one of the two. Here's something that's a little different. Tried this one time, really liked it. I'm all about some good quality cheese dip. one bowl wonders.
Who are you calling cheese dip?
Hey, anyway, so here we go. First thing you're going to need is one side of a wild turkey breast, okay, about 2 or 3 pounds. And you can either slow or pressure cook it. And I use the Instapot. And make sure you get it good and shredded after it's cooked real well, okay? 2 blocks of cream cheese, yummy. 1 cup of sour cream, yummy. 2 packets of powdered Hidden Valley Ranch mix, which is cool stuff within itself. And 1 cup of Sweet Baby Ray sauce, baby. That's going to give it that twang. 2 cups of sharp cheddar cheese, and you're going to shred it, of course. 1 cup of chicken broth and a little salt and pepper. You're going to season the turkey breast with salt and pepper and then cook for about 6 to 8 hours with 1 cup of the chicken broth in a slow cooker, okay? Or about 22 minutes in the pressure cooker or Instapot. That's the big difference there. All right, and then you're going to shred that turkey with 2 forks and, you know, lightly chop it up. And shred the turkey with a fork and, you know, or you can use a knife, whatever, which way you want to do it. Mix the turkey meat with the cream cheese, sour cream, the Sweet Baby Ray's sauce, and the Hidden Valley Ranch mix, okay? The dried kind. in a large bowl. All right, you're going to mix the ingredients very well. Then you're going to take this mixture and you're going to pour it into a oven baking dish and top with the shredded cheese. And then you're going to bake that for about 20 minutes at 350 degrees. And then you just get you some tortilla chips. And I also like to take and use a little sour cream. And if you want to go kind of Mexican, I'll take some sour cream and maybe a jar of some good picante sauce or something like that or something. And you kind of make a shredded cheese, wild turkey Mexican thing going on there. Bag of chips and you're good to go. So
there you go.
It's pretty good. You ought to try it. If you love sour cream, you know, it's really good. And I'm all about some sour.
Could you use it with domestic turkey?
Yes, because that's the first time I cooked it. That's how I cooked it the first time.
And you go in and get domestic turkey, and you can buy half a breast of domestic turkey.
Exactly. So it's a little different, something different to do with a turkey, you know. So there you go.
Speaking of something different, I promised Boat Girl that I would tell you about this.
Awesome.
She called me yesterday, and we're about to have our 2-year anniversary, and we still have that same impasse that all married couples have.
Uh-oh. Okay.
What do you want for dinner?
I
don't know. What do you want for dinner?
Me and my wife's been married 33 years, and we still do that.
What do you want for dinner?
Here's my favorite answer.
Just
that's my favorite
something.
Answer.
I don't care. Just Whatever. Pick something. And then if you're a smart guy, here's what you do. You pick something completely left field. I know she hates certain type of food, so I'll suggest that. Well, let's go eat so-and-so. No, I don't like that. Okay, then you pick something.
Bingo.
Well, I don't know.
Dude, like I said.
And then for a while, this worked for a while, I would say, oh, I have got the best place for us to go eat.
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay, what is it? I said, no, you got to guess.
Oh, man.
Said, oh, I don't know. And I said, no, you got to guess. See if you can think. You got to guess where it was I picked out for us to go eat or eat whatever. And she'll say something. I go, dang it, you hit it right on the head.
Smart man.
Yeah, so that worked 2 or 3 times. But anyway. So this time I got I've been wanting some of that quail. We got a few more quail.
I've got a few
and
left.
We actually had 2 chucker left in the freezer, you know, from Clinton House.
Right.
Hoo ha, hoorah, whatever.
The bird slaying.
The bird slaying back in before Christmas. And, you know, we need to eat them. And
right.
So I said, okay. I said, we'll go to the store, get us something green. That's the big struggle. Get us something green. Okay, because we got mashed potatoes or whatever. We ain't got nothing green.
Right.
And it's a daggum bag salad. You end up eating green bag salad. But I said, okay, look, get a marinade that doesn't have chunks in it. All right? I don't care what kind of marinade it is. Just get something that doesn't have chunks in it because I'm going to put this, you know, it was yesterday after the storms, there was a window when you could, you know, go outside without
getting it. It was about an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's when it was. And I said, get me some marinade, and I'm going to inject it into the chucker.
Right.
So, lo and behold, she brings home teriyaki.
I love it.
She says, it's the only thing that didn't have chunks in it that I could find. So, I injected, and I started thinking about this. The chucker is Asian partridge, right?
Amen.
So, I put the teriyaki, you know. And the kind of funny thing about that is, when you try to inject a chucker that's been shot, and you inject it,
yeah.
You know, normally with a turkey... And this has got the skin off of it.
Sure.
So you got to get it up underneath the flesh for it to hold. But when you shoot that in the...
Was it like a sprinkler?
Yeah, it's like a sprinkler. You see, it was... All I had to do was just pump it in there. It was already going because it's got channels in it from being shot.
From the bird shot.
From the bird shot. But anyway, so I did the best I could to pump this thing full of teriyaki marinade.
Wow.
Stuck it on the grill hot.
Right.
Hot as I could get it.
So to sear it. I mean, sear it.
For about 15... No, I cooked it. 15 minutes, because that's what the recipe said. 15 minutes?
Cool.
Man, it was good.
Man, I love teriyaki.
It was good.
I used teriyaki for years to marinate venison.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. I just love that flavor is.
She actually brought home some sesame seeds, too.
Yeah.
So when it got done, I poured a little teriyaki on it to make it sticky and put them sesame seeds on it.
Yeah. Job well done, Phillip. Yeah.
I still got a couple of them between my teeth.
You ought to brush them once in a while.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. You wake up, if you eat anything with sesame seeds in it,
yeah,
in the middle of the night, you wake up and have a snack.
Exactly.
Don't even have to get out of bed. Okay?
That's awesome,
they'll fall
dude.
Out between your teeth.
Cool.
So,
wow. That was a great cooking section of the show, man.
There you go. Well, let's go to our break. When we got back, we got a little bit of turkey news to talk about. Has nothing to do with sesame seeds.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry, and the Upstate's number one talk station. Stay tuned. And speaking of Sonny's camping trailer, that's in Springer's part of the world, and they have a major expansion on what they have actually on the property now.
Yeah.
It's really... They've basically took the whole hill over out there, just right off of 85 there.
And we're going to be there for
it. I know.
I'm
looking forward to seeing my old friends again.
When they have their open house,
yeah,
at some point, I think it's going to be in May.
It's a ton of they've got a ton of stuff on that place in that place now. I mean, you know, they had a lot before, but it's just like an expansion of it. Can't find a daggum RV there. I don't guess you really want one.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway.
Well, as promised, we got some turkey news. Uh-oh.
Citizens arrest. Citizens arrest. Phillip's computer is on self-destruct in 3, 2, it's done.
Oh, wow.
Well, here. You can start
with
this.
No, here it is.
Okay.
Here it is.
Okay. Wow, that's why I don't
Maybe
use
not.
Those things, man. Wow, that's crazy, man.
Well, you read it then. Talk about the,
okay.
While I figure out what's going
All
on
right.
here.
All right, the South Carolina DNR Big Game Program is interested in better understanding the experiences, techniques, and factors of success for wild turkey hunters in South Carolina. In order to do that, we need the input of dedicated turkey hunters. You got to stop that noise, cuz. If you hunt turkeys in South Carolina and would like to help out and participate in online surveys, please fill out the information below. And, of course, this was pulled off the DNR website. All right. And to help us learn more about hunters' opinions and make more informed management recommendations and decisions. All right. Be signing up below. And this goes on and tells you where to sign up and so forth and so on. So what they're wanting is an input on what's going on with the what you're seeing as hunters, what I'm seeing as hunters, and, you know, and be kind of in correspondence with the DNR on what they're going to do about the upcoming turkey seasons in the future. Because as we all know, things are changing, especially here in the upstate. I believe more so in the upstate than in anywhere else through the South Carolina area. Down in the low country, turkeys, you know, of course, they've got tons and tons of places and area and agriculture and everything else for them down there. And so they just, you know, doesn't seem to be having the problems we're having up here in the upstate. So there you go, Philip. Have you got that thing programmed yet? And on a lighter note, we were talking about, since you're still having problems,
yeah,
the white turkey, okay?
Well, that's what I was trying to find, and
now,
I found it.
There's been a couple of them killed this year, okay? You had one killed maybe in Mississippi, all right? And I think it was killed, there's the one
in
from
Tennessee. Yep, yep.
But there was one killed by a young hunter. Okay, and I can't remember where it's from. Well, one of those brain-dead morons on ESPN basically just dogged him out on Twitter. And, of course, you know what the retribution was that was from. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, morons open mouth, insert foot. Okay, and so, and then this one I was talking about was in Tennessee.
Yeah, this was 5 days ago.
Yeah, more recently.
You got to
go through like 900.
So many pop-ups.
Exactly.
And they're talking about a hunter in Rutherford County, Tennessee, who managed to bag the turkey of a lifetime less than a week into the state's hunting season. Cameron Bond of Warren County shot and killed, it says, a wild-looking turkey, which reportedly had a condition known as leucism, resulting in a partial loss of pigmentation. And you see these from time to time. You'll see... I guess, you know, you say, well, that's a rare albino turkey.
No.
And people say, well, why'd you kill that? And so this one had a loss of pigmentation. And they got a photo of him holding a turkey and showing the feathers, nearly all white.
Beautiful.
Except for a couple of spots behind its feathers. So you got a lot of difference in pigmentation.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, to me, that's no different. And look, anti-hunters are going to take any opportunity they can get. You know, if somebody kills an albino deer, they're going, well, why'd you kill that deer for? You know, that was a rare, beautiful
specimen. Because I had a tag.
So, yeah.
And it was legal.
It's completely legal and all that. You know, folks who say that white turkeys are rare, you know, they need to go out to the poultry farm and see that most turkeys are white.
Agreed.
And that's what Boat Girl said. Boat Girl said, all that was a turkey got loose from turkey farm. Somebody shot it. What's the big deal?
Exactly.
And there if is you look at it, it kind of looks like that might be the case.
Yeah, and there's a large flock of birds up in the north end of Spartanburg County just before you go into Cherokee County. And a lot of those birds have got some white pigmentation in them because I've seen them on the side of the road a couple times. You know, I don't have no opportunity to hunt them, but I have pulled my truck off and messed with their head with my mouth call a little bit, but a lot of those birds have quite a bit of white pigmentation. So, you know, they look like to me they got loose from somebody's turkey farm, too.
Yeah. And I couldn't find, and I do remember seeing a while back, and we were on the road and didn't cover it, the picture of the kid who killed a wild turkey, but I can't lay my hands on that. I don't remember if that was in Mississippi or Tennessee.
I can't remember.
Where it was at. Because wasn't it am I confusing it? There was one where a kid killed a turkey, had like 11 beards on it.
Okay, that wasn't a white one.
But I don't
think
that was the white one.
No, it was not.
So,
and there have been a couple of studs killed in the state this week that just, I think there was one, it was 27 pounds, cuz. Good Lord.
I saw that.
He needs
too.
To get on Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually watched the video of that guy harvesting that bird. And, you know, the turkeys are out, you know, and they're doing their thing. And this thing comes out, looks like Fat Albert.
Yeah.
And that's before he even went into full strut. I was like, good Lord.
He already looked like he was in strut and he was just walking.
How is this thing waddling around?
You know, I saw something, and I get a lot of this on my Facebook feed, you know, see them here and there. And sometimes I'll mark them and, you know, for the show later on. But there was one, I have never seen this before, where a guy had a decoy out and a hen walked up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And a hen, I mean, and when they. Typically, hens set their pecking order because there is a female pecking order.
Absolutely.
Usually do that in the fall, you know, which one's going to be the dominant hen. But this hen came up to the decoy, and she spread her fan out. I have never seen a hen decoy fan out like that. And, of course, she didn't have the full plumage and everything.
No, but still.
But somebody who was new to turkey hunting.
Would have shot that joker.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I wouldn't have, you know. I mean, dadgum, you talk about, I identify as a gobbler, you know, because you can have bearded
hens.
Hen turkeys.
Absolutely.
And, of course, in some states allow you, as long as it's got a beard, to harvest that bird.
Because how are you supposed to really know anyway?
Well, South Carolina, it's illegal to harvest a bearded turkey. But can you imagine
a bearded hen?
I mean, a bearded hen. Can you imagine a bearded hen coming up and
I mean,
and
that's putting a lot on an inexperienced turkey hunter.
Yeah, yeah. And the truest thing in my experience, look at that head.
The head tells you every time.
If that head is still just old blah gray.
Ain't happening. That is not a gobbler.
Looks like a white pencil erasure that's been used.
Exactly.
Then that's a hen.
Yeah.
And if it don't turn red, stark white or blue or
I love
change,
that.
Flip, then you might want to
hang on. Something that's just etched in my mind on a few birds that I've taken. I mean, I had them so worked up, their head was just, you know those dadgum things that live in the sea that's kind of like a squid and they just change colors at the blink of an eye?
Yep.
I've watched a gobbler just his head go from red to blue to, I mean, he was freaking out. He died shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I had him worked up, cuz. Mm. And it was just like crazy watching those colors in his head.
It's all
insane.
That blood. It's all that blood flow going through there.
Yeah, well, it flowed all right.
It flowed.
Right there. That's number six has lit him up.
The flow turned into the flop, right?
Exactly, the dirt flop.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, let's go to our break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Brandon Cobb, the Bassmaster Elite winner at Lake Harwell a couple weeks ago. Looking forward to that.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Stay tuned. Going to talk to Brandon, the Lake Harwell champ.
Well, for those of you who remember a couple of weeks ago, actually about 3 weeks ago, when I don't know. Well, we had some springtime conditions, and things were going good on Lake Harwell. We had local angler Brandon Cobb, who basically, he did go wire to wire, and won the Bassmaster Elite Tournament on Lake Harwell. And we caught up with Brandon. Welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Hey, thank y'all for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure, brother. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It was an awesome week for sure.
Yeah, and back when we had spring, and now that it's winter again. I tell you what, though, as a pro bass fisherman, that's just, I guess you just kind of take it as it comes, huh, Brandon? Whatever, because we had some weather during that weekend, and you just kept on fishing.
Yeah, it was, that week was not your normal weather for mid-April at Hartwell, for sure. I think it got down to like 32, 34, like two or three nights earlier in that week, and it honestly, it had me a little worried for the tournament because the fish just weren't biting good. And I think it worked out well for me, though, because practice was pretty terrible for most people, I think. And it just made it kind of seem like it wasn't going to be normal Hartwell that week. And then by the tournament, got warm again, and things kind of started falling into place, and it was like normal Hartwell in April.
Now, do you remember back when in the Bassmaster Elite Series, if you were the favored local angler, it was pretty much surely meant that you were going to finish near the bottom of the pack. But it seems like there's been a reversal of that lately, and if you're the favored local angler,
my money's on him.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense nowadays.
Yeah, it's definitely been a swing with Ott winning the Classic, and there's been some other local standouts at tournaments. It's usually, though, that, in my experience anyway, it makes it tougher. Winning's hard when you're a local. I think it helps you do well in the tournament a lot, but it's hard to win when you're a local because you just got too much going through your head most of the time.
Well, and I think that's it. And a lot of the Bass Pros have told us, said, man, I overthink at a lake where I shouldn't be thinking at all. So, exactly.
Go ahead, Brad.
I found myself doing that some in practice. In the tournament, I kind of had, you know, things were falling into place, and it kind of makes it easier when you're catching fish to not make weird decisions. But in practice, I kind of fished the entire lake and was trying to find something, fishing a lot of places that have been good in the past, and it just wasn't working out. So I think during the tournament, it makes a big difference in any tournament, not just being not on your local lake, but it also on your local lake, to catch fish kind of early and kind of have things fall into place to keep you from making weird decisions.
Now, having gone to school at Clemson, that obviously spent a lot of time on Hartwell. You're from Greenwood, South Carolina, so about an hour away.
That's right.
Having fished that lake all your life, what kind of changes have you seen? Because I'm of the belief that since Lake Hartwell has become kind of the jewel of the Bassmaster Elite Series, that we're seeing a lot more fishing pressure, and I think the fishery's changing some.
It is. I think Hartwell's definitely got – it's a little tougher than it used to be, but it's actually – I think a lot of that has to do, too, there's more spotted bass in the lake. It's easier to catch fish, but I think there's more like a – there's a lot of 3 to 4 pound fish and not a whole lot of giants, which makes for an awesome fishery and a fun time, you know. But I haven't caught a ton of big fish, but it's still – I think it's definitely one of the best lakes we have in the state by far, and all times of year, 12 months of the year is what I love about it. And so, another thing about Hartwell, too, I think you're noticing, like, in my opinion, Hartwell, I mean, if you look at it 7-8 years ago, Hartwell was down 10 to 20 feet at some points, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the fishing was honestly a lot easier when it was down like that, just because there was less cover in the water. It was easier to fish. I think you're just seeing the full lake. It'll take a while for the full lake to kind of a lot of that shoreline cover to kind of deteriorate and fall out and make it a little easier fishing.
So I was reading the synopsis about kind of how you approached, and you were definitely looking for spawning fish. And it said, I thought it was pretty cool. It said, a lot of times I would see where that fish was and I'd try to catch it before I got there and not get there and camp out on it. Were those primarily largemouth or spotted bass, or we'll wait till we get into the boat and see what it is?
Yeah, it was mostly largemouth. I caught a few spots, but for the most part, I was fishing a little shallower and I guess back in creeks a little bit and like flatter banks, and spots seem to stay kind of near that deeper water and main lake stuff. So I caught a few spots, but I would say 90% of the fish I caught were largemouth.
And, you know, that's been a change the past two Elite Series. You know, and one of them was the Classic, where everybody goes out looking for largemouth and didn't find them, and spots won it. So was that sort of a gamble on your part, trying to stick with the largemouth bite?
Well, It would be if it was earlier in the year, but once you get this far along in the stage of the fish, like the spawn, it's kind of largemouth dominated at Hartwell. And when it's colder, they kind of get in the same places, so you can run into both at one time. But as it gets warmer, you can catch spots, but you're probably not going to compete with spots. So if it had been a month before or even 2 months before, I think you're going to have a lot of kind of mixed bags you're targeting. But, but once it gets warmer, it's pretty much largemouth.
And in looking at your career decision, maybe not so much a career decision, but at least for the next little bit, you were on the FLW Tour, which is why Bass Elite doesn't classify you as a true freshman. I guess you'd be considered a redshirt freshman. I don't know.
Works for me.
Is there such thing?
Works for me.
But so came over from FLW with all the shakeup, with a lot of the pros leaving to go to MLF. Good decision on your part.
Yeah, it's definitely worked out well so far. I love FLW, and it made my career. I can't it's what got me to where I am today. But it was kind of a cool change. Like I think I was at FLW about 5 years, and it was when I came over to the Bass side. It felt like a new job essentially. You know, you're excited for it again, and it was it's been awesome so far.
Well, Brandon, what was your two go-to baits? I mean, I think I seen a wacky worm, and I wasn't sure about the other one.
Yeah, basically, I caught fish on some other things, but every fish I weighed in came on two baits. It was a Zoom fluke stick, wacky rig with no weight. I was just basically throwing it at, you know, green spots or beds or whatever. And then once I found a fish on bed and, like, needed to power pole down, you know, fish for it, I'd use an eighth-ounce ball head shaky head with a Zoom trick worm.
Bingo.
And that was that's what I caught every fish I weighed in, I think.
Wow.
And,
well,
and me and Philip was debating, do you still got that big old cardboard check in the back of your car?
Yeah. How did that work?
I didn't get a cardboard check.
Oh, man, I'd have been pissed. I'd have been mad.
I tell you what, if I ever, of course, you got to enter to win. But
right.
But if I ever got one of them big cardboard checks, I swear to you, I'd go to my local bank with that thing and try to cash it.
Absolutely.
At the drive through and say, hey, y'all want me to fold this up or what? Do I need to come inside?
I don't think it'll fit in the little bubble you send through the tube.
Yeah.
First thing I'd do is ride it around in the back of my pickup truck for a week, okay?
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed. I've never got the big check before.
Oh, and man.
I got a big check, just not a size big check.
Right. Yeah. That trophy looks pretty good, too, don't it, Brandon?
Yeah, they give you the trophy instead.
That's right. I got the trophy. I still haven't even found somewhere to put it. It's on the kitchen counter still. I don't know where I'm going to put it yet. That trophy, by the way, is significantly heavier than you would expect.
Yeah.
When I went to pick it up on the stage, I was like, oh, no, might not be able to do this.
Hey, you love it. Come in from holding up fish and your hands all slick, got fish slime on it, and go to pick that thing up and it slips out of your hands and shatters. That'd be great. That'd be a great moment.
That would stink.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm going to be the first Elite Series angler to throw his trophy off the stage.
Yeah. So you win at Hartwell. You come out of that, you're feeling great. It's like, yeah, man, South Carolina's my state. Now I'm going to go down there to the coast and show them I can whip their butt on both ends of the state. And it's a humbling
experience.
That
wasn't exactly my mentality going down there. That place, I knew – like, looking at the schedule the entire year, I was like, well, if there's one I'm going to struggle in, that's probably going to be it. And it kind of went like that.
And you're not alone in
that. No, you're not, Brandon.
A lot of anglers go like, you know, I get it, and it's the venue, but a lot of anglers just shake their head when they're talking about tidal rivers, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to go, but I ain't excited about it.
That's right. I like some tidal rivers. Like, the Potomac River is one of my favorite fisheries in the country. But the problem with the Winya is my style of fishing. Like, yes, I practice for tournaments, but I don't put a lot of weight on my practice, I guess you'd say. Like, during the tournament, if I think something else is working, I kind of just scratch everything. That's just the way I've always done it. And the Winyah is one of those places to where you can't just really run around and fish.
Right.
And it just, and I kind of tried to do it, and it just doesn't work really. It's kind of one of those like grinded out in one area type tournaments. And I just, it didn't work out well for me down there. I kind of picked the general 15-20 mile stretch. I was like, well, I'm going to practice here. I think you can do okay here. And I just think it was the wrong stretch and they weren't biting.
Well, speaking about running around in style, how about that Falcon bass boat that's made about an hour from your home there, and being able to champion that boat in South Carolina?
Oh, yeah, man, it's awesome. This is the first year I've ran one. I've seen them around for a while and decided to make the switch to them this year, and it's by far the best boat I've ever ran. It's, speed, handling, everything. I've been so happy with it, and it fits my style of fishing better. I'm more of like a run and gun type fisherman, and it's just the way it handles and jumping up on plane and everything, it fits my style perfectly.
And, you know, South Carolina had always been kind of known as the center console mafia. A lot of boats, a lot of center console boats made in South Carolina. But we got a bass boat manufacturer. A lot of folks don't realize that down in Newberry in the Falcon boats. And coming along, man, I mean, it's getting a lot of attention.
That's right. Yeah, I think in the last, it's only been around 4 years, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
somewhere around there. And I mean, just from 4 years ago to this point now, I mean, it's crazy the strides they made, and the quality's there, and I just love it. So right here, being in South Carolina, I mean, the factory's right there, so it's awesome just be able to, like, I rode down there every couple of days and looked at my boat being made, so that's pretty cool.
Awesome.
There you go.
And our buddy Chris Wells said you was going to go places someday, Brandon. So he's probably hit it dead on. So he was picking you the whole time. He said, I just don't believe nobody. We talked to him a little bit, and he said, man, I don't believe nobody's going to do nothing with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it came to fruition, you know. Cool.
It was a cool week for sure. You want to win anywhere, obviously.
Sure.
But to be able to win at Hartwell with, one of my sponsors is Anderson. So right there with all them and like all my friends and family and everybody was there. Like, it was one of the coolest places I could have possibly won. And I mean, like, just while I was fishing out there during the week, it was just cool thinking about like fishing tournaments with my dad when I was 12 years old, club tournaments on the same stretches that I was fishing in the Elite Series.
Yeah, and people standing on the overpasses going, hey, Brandon, what's going on?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, my cameraman thought it was funny the first day. A guy came out on his dock yelling at me, like, acted like he was mad, like, what are you doing in my cove? And my cameraman's like, what's going on? I know him. That's one of my buddies.
Yeah. That's so cool, man.
He's kind of nervous at first.
Cameraman's ready to tuck and run.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, Brandon, congratulations on your win, and thanks for sharing that with us on the show. Man, just good luck in the rest of the season, and I'm sure we'll be talking with you again. And that's Brandon Cobb, local angler, Greenwood, South Carolina. You're going to be seeing that name a lot. And good luck, man. Just go out there and get them.
Thank you. Heading to Texas next week for the next one. So we'll hope we catch some out there.
All right. Good seeing you. Good talking to you, Brandon. Take care and have a great Easter.
Thank y'all for having me on. Y'all too.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Good guy. Young fella, too.
Oh, yeah. He gets excited, too.
That's what I like to see. I like passion, man.
Yeah, I like to see somebody get excited about it.
I just caught some fish and won some money. That don't do nothing for me.
Nah. All right. We're going to go to our break. And can we end the show after this?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think so.
My schedule says we're going to go to the Roadkill Cafe, right?
No. Calendar of events there, Yahoo.
Something will happen.
Right here, Upstate Outdoors. Stay tuned.
Cut the button on. Woo!
Yeah.
Man, I feel like I've had a butt whoop in this show.
Yeah. Money Penny, you glad Money Penny ain't slapping?
Money Penny. She's not with my butt. She's informing me.
All right.
We got a calendar of events.
All right, yeah. I got a couple texts I want to go through first. First of all, howdy from Theodore, Alabama. Thank you so much. I pretty much know who you are. God bless you. And we was talking about the bearded hens earlier and texter said they had some bearded women at the Five Forks Library a few weeks ago. I don't know what the legal limit on those are. But anyway, on to the calendar of events. Here we go. We got a National Wild Turkey Federation couple of get-togethers. One of them is the Hunting Heritage Banquet. Newberry County Gobblers at the Newberry Country Club on May the 4th at 6 p.m., 414 Country Club Road, Newberry, South Carolina. And if you are interested in that, please call Jason Miller at 803-577-9175. Got another one coming up in Gaffney. National Wild Turkey Federation Hunting Heritage Banquet, Gaffney Chapter at the Cherokee Shrine Club, 151 Shrine Club Road, Gaffney, South Carolina. And if you're interested in that, contact Robert Phillips at 864-461-7020. And also coming up for the little guys, the Jakes, the Spartanburg Chapter of the NWTF will be having their Spartanburg Annual Fishing Rodeo, May the 11th, 9 a.m., Chapman Farm Pond, 2815 Cannons Campground Road, Spartanburg, and you can contact Ryan Groh at 864-590-1750 or contact him by his email at turkeyhuntsc@gmail.com. And all of those are posted on the National Wild Turkey Federation website under local chapters, Spartanburg. Now we're going to move to some QDMA banquets. We got the Lakeland's Beer and Deer Social. Gosh, I love just the way that sounds. May the 2nd, 5:30 p.m. to 7:30. This is going to be at the Santa Fe Mexican Grill at 248 Birch Tree Drive, Greenwood, South Carolina. And if you're interested in that, contact Sean Fisher at 864-993-6814. And one more, we got the QDMA Mid-Carolina Branch 11th Annual Big Buck Showcase. And this is going to go down on May the 10th, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Friend Building at 902 Friend Street, Newberry, South Carolina. And if you're interested in that, contact Tyler Turner at 803-944-1586. And all that information is available on the QDMA website at the local chapters. Go ahead.
Well, speaking of staying out of trouble, a Canadian mom thwarted a cougar attack on her 7-year-old son. A Canadian mom on Vancouver Island went toe-to-toe with a cougar after it attacked her 7-year-old son right in their own backyard. As CTV News Vancouver Island reports, Zachary Lockhart was playing in the backyard of his family's Lake Cowichan home after school one evening earlier this month. His mother, Chelsea Lockhart, was inside the home when she apparently heard their fence surrounding the property rattle. She says, "I wonder what that's about." A young cougar, and that's a mountain lion, was attempting to get through the fence, flashing its teeth as it stared the boy down in the yard. In that moment, Zachary knew he was in danger, so he started taking off down the alleyway to get to the house, Chelsea recalled. The cougar pushed its way through, and you can see scratch marks on the pole. She said, "I could hear his voice. I could hear struggling, so I ran down the stairs and ran to his voice and turned the corner, and I see this animal on my child." She's out there going, hey, get off my kid, hey.
Yeah.
I'm doing a Canadian mom.
I know
thing.
You are,
buddy. Once outside, Chelsea went full-on mom mode. Basically, she went Springer's mom mode.
Yeah.
Before she knew what was happening, she was engaged in a wrestling match with the animal who was trying to drag her son out of the yard. Of course, Mama Springer would have pumped that thing full of lead.
38 special, baby.
Yeah. Zachary was on the ground, and the cougar was over him, and it was attached to his arm, said Lockhart. "I just leaped on it and tried to pry its mouth open. Knowing she might very well be fighting for her child's life, she got her hands in the cougar's mouth, desperately trying to pry its jaws open. I looked at him and just thought, my kid could die right here before my eyes. All I could think of is, what can you do? What can you do with your own physical strength?" In the tussle that seemed to last for several minutes, the animal eventually let go of Zachary and ran off. He sustained injuries to his neck and arms and was left with a 4-centimeter gash on his forehead, which basically means he's going to be the coolest kid in school.
Yeah.
Right?
In a bad way.
In
a good way, but had to go around it, you know.
He's like, "Hey, man, cougar. Yeah, I survived." First responders arrived moments later, and both Zachary and his mother transported to the hospital for immediate medical treatment. He got a couple of stitches in his head, expected to make a full recovery. Now, according to reports, a cougar involved in the attack, along with another one, is believed to be its sibling, were caught and exterminated by conservation officers. It's thought that the juvenile mountain lions were separated from their mother for an extended period of time.
That makes sense.
And a necropsy later revealed that the animals were likely starving.
Makes sense.
At the time. So they were desperate.
And another thing it would be curious for me to know is, you know, a lot of places where they've stopped cougar and mountain lion hunting, they've got big problems.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are not scared of nothing anymore. They're jumping on mountain bikers off the cliffs.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're not scared and they don't have a reason to be scared, bad things can happen. And they're having big problems in certain parts of the United States where they have stopped cougar hunting, and those mountain lions, the numbers are up. They're not scared of nothing, and you know, they see you coming by on a mountain lion. I'm on a mountain bike at like 20 miles an hour. They just look like, you know, a rabbit. Okay.
Hey, that's somebody's trolling food. Right,
exactly.
There.
So you know, it's just there's always a reason for a hunting season. Yeah. Always.
Well,
that's the show.
Thank goodness Chelsea was there.
Exactly.
To knock him off here. So good mom.
Good mom.
She pumped him full of lead.
I would.
I don't think it did that. Well, there's the end of our show. Want to thank our guest today, Anthony Rayburn from Georgia Department of Natural Resources. Also, Brandon Cobb, Bassmaster Elite. That's the end of the show. Happy Easter, everybody. Remember, tomorrow is the day, and go out and do your thing.
He has risen. God bless. I love all of you. Appreciate you every week. Talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.